Welcome to episode 306 of Fly Away. Here at Outlander Travel, we are passionate about, well, travel. Throughout the years, we've seen many changes to the industry, but one thing that has stayed the same is the urge to explore our world and make the connections that can only be made through experience. We invite you to come along with us. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website or Facebook. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Elizabeth, Lindsay, Donna, and George. It would be an understatement to say that 2020 has been a year of interesting challenges that no one could have seen coming. No one knows that better than our next guest. Chris D'Souza is a global business strategy leader, certified business and life coach, sustainable adventure travel agent, and perhaps most impressive to me, three-time national barefoot water ski champ. Welcome to the show.
Yay! Thank you.
This spring, Chris experienced being on top of the world when she successfully summited Mount Kilimanjaro. When she descended the mountain, the world was shutting down from COVID and everything had changed. She's managed to use the power of mindset to help her navigate the changed world, and she's here tonight to tell us about her journey and the lessons she's learned. So let's get started. So thank you for joining us. We're so excited. we did a podcast way back when we started on Everest. So I had a friend who was climbing to base camp the year that the earthquake and the avalanche happened. So we have kind of, you know, now we got two mountains.
two down.
Yeah. So why Kilimanjaro? Why was this on your list?
Yeah, that is such a great question. And thank you guys so much for having me. I am really humbled and honored to be on the Outlander Travel podcast. So thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Kilimanjaro for me was a little bit of a tie to my childhood, believe it or not. And one of my really dear friends, his name was Todd Franklin. He actually suffered from childhood leukemia, and he was adopted. He was adopted into a family at birth and was diagnosed with leukemia, and no one from his adopted family was a bone marrow match. And when I was 8 years old, two of my really good girlfriends and I, we asked our parents if we could be tested to see if we were matches. And my other two girlfriends from elementary school were not, but guess what? I was. And so I had a spinal tap at the age of 8 years old and was able to donate my bone marrow. And he lived to be to the ripe old age of 12, which doesn't sound very old, but back in 1982, that was quite a feat for children that were suffering from leukemia. So when we got older, my two girlfriends and I said, you know, how can we honor his memory and really bring his legacy to life? And we saw that the Leukemia Lymphoma Society had these amazing adventures all around the world. And the three of us decided that we were going to raise money for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society and joined LLS in their Climb for a Cure, summiting Mount Kilimanjaro. So that's how Kilimanjaro came onto our collective bucket list.
That's awesome, because they do Race for the Cure, right? Not
They do. Yeah. Yeah. They sure do.
Yeah, I see them like at Disney and other big races.
Yeah. That's big awesome. Marathons. And yeah, they do like half marathons, they do 5Ks, they do full marathons, and then they do all these amazing adventure treks to some of the world's most remote places that are really very magical and inspiring.
I did not realize that part of that. Wow. That's really cool. Okay, so can you talk a little bit about before we get into the journey, can you talk a little, go ahead and give the spoiler of what happened when you came back?
We'll start at the end. Sandy is one of those people that reads the last two pages of the book and then goes back and starts again, just for the record.
Yeah, so you know, I guess it kind of goes back to if you've ever heard of that famous quote, begin with the end in mind, right? So so we were 8 days unplugged on the side of one of the largest freestanding volcanoes in the world, literally unplugged from the outside world. And we left on March 8th to begin our journey to summit Kilimanjaro. And all of us came back, all of my climbing team, we came back on March 18th. And when we landed back in Moshi, which is the town where everyone begins their journey to summit Mount Kilimanjaro, we had no idea that the world that we left behind had completely been turned upside down. And we were told that we could not do our post-safari, that that had been canceled. We were told that we would be lucky if we got to come back to the United States because most of the flights had been canceled. And I was actually on the last scheduled flight from Moshi on Qatar Airways connecting through Doha back into Fort Lauderdale. So I actually made it back on the very last flight. And if I had not made that flight, then I would probably still be in Moshi today. So I came back, I summited Mount Kilimanjaro on a Monday. I came back to Miami, Florida on a Wednesday. And then on Friday, I was told, unfortunately, like thousands of others in the travel industry, it was shared with me that my position in the travel industry had been eliminated due to COVID-19. So it was really a shock, to say the least, because on a Monday, I was literally on the rooftop of Africa on a Monday. And then on a Friday, my whole professional world and livelihood, you know, had literally been turned upside down. So, and I am a mom, a divorced mom of two teenage boys. So, and I'm the breadwinner. So it was like kind of a big shock for me when I came home. I was like, okay, we have to take a pause. We have to regroup.
So, big step forward, big step back.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, it was really a huge shock. And for me, you know, we all have, and I'm not unique, like my story is not unique. There are all of us have really suffered, you know, tremendous financial hardships and our lives have been changed, you know, forever. Due to, you know, this virus. And the one thing I would just say is that, you know, I gave myself like the gift of the weekend, like Saturday and Sunday, to kind of wallow. But then on Monday morning when I woke up, I was like, that's enough. I'm done. So I had 2 days of wallowing and then I said, okay, let's move forward. So.
And I love how you talk about the things you learned on that journey and how it's helped you with this current one. So can we talk about some of that? Because that's so cool. I love the way you've kind of twisted it back around to something good.
Yeah,
again.
Absolutely. You know, it's very interesting because it seems like kind of as I've been privileged to be able to share my story with different audiences, I've actually learned new lessons more than the top three, which is quite interesting. But, you know, the first thing that was really very apparent to me that was a really huge parallel between how do you summit Mount Kilimanjaro successfully, and then also how do you navigate life successfully in COVID-19, it's really about making sure that we have the right tools for the job. And a lot of people think when you're climbing a mountain that the right tools for the job would be probably like having the right hiking boots and having the right sleeping bag, making sure that you've got all the right gear, right? And, you know, I spent a pretty penny on the gear, trust me. I mean, but at the end of the day, I could have spent three times the amount of money on that gear, on that equipment. And the real tool that really was the right tool for the job for me, it was my mindset. And where that really became apparent was I didn't realize it until I had come back or until I was actually there on the mountain. And I had trained for almost a year to actually summit, and it required a lot of discipline. And, you know, I went to this state park here in Jupiter, Florida, and I slept in a sleeping bag on the ground like for three nights. And, you know, one night I would obviously sleep on the ground in a tent, wake up the next morning, hike for 11 miles in the sand dunes with my hiking boots, and then with 20 pounds of water on my back. So yeah, because I had to simulate the weight and we don't have mountains in Florida. So, you know, so I was like pretty tired at the end of the day. And I did that for 3 days straight. So then I would sleep on the ground and I slept like, you know what? I did not sleep well. and frankly, I didn't feel like, hiking the next morning because I was tired and I was just didn't feel good. And I really had to dig deep, and I had to say, you know, what is it that I really want? And what are my goals, and why do I really want to do this? And when I got really connected with my why, that deeper why, which is the why that I shared with you at the beginning about Todd Franklin, it gave me the motivation and it gave me the focus to wake up and suit up and show up and enjoy the hike the next day. And it really moved me out of that place of, you know, to that place of, ah, and yeah. And so it was really all of that preparation and training that when I was on the side of the mountain and when we were literally kind of doing the same thing, but it was like times 10, it was like on steroids, difficult. I realized that my mindset was really, it's 90% of climbing a mountain successfully. And the other piece of it is that coming back to COVID-19, you know, and looking at life on life's terms, it's all about choice. And it's all about, you know, where our attention goes, our energy flows. And at the end of the day, when we wake up every morning, we have a choice. You know, we've got our feelings. How do we feel? And then that directs our focus. And then our focus directs our choices in life. And what I learned was that I have a lot more power over what I choose to give away in terms of my energy and my focus, like where I choose to direct that on a daily basis. And that for me has made such a huge difference since I've come back. And one day at a time, as we're all learning every day, you know, with COVID-19. So that was one of the lessons that I learned.
I love that I have done marathons, and I agree with you. Your mental outlook on that is such a huge part of it. And that can really help you get through that kind of stuff. Lindsay, was it you that was trying to say something?
No, it was me.
Donna, I'm sorry.
So is it, did you have, once you actually got up there and got into the zone, and did you still have that reservation when you were actually on the mountain, or did you just the vista and seeing what you were seeing give you that extra boost of energy that just you didn't have in Florida?
You know, it's a great question, Donna. And the real transparent answer is that every day was different. So every day was a different day. And like day one, when we were just going into the actual national park, our bus became stuck. And it was stuck in a mud bog, and like the tires were literally like halfway, like covered in mud. And then our vehicle was completely covered. I mean, it was like it wasn't going anywhere. So we all had to get out, and we all had to take these planks from the top of the bus, and we had to put them underneath the wheels, and then find rocks and boulders and things like that to get the bus out of the mud. And I was covered in mud. I'm talking like I look like Sasquatch or something. And you know, and it was exhausting, because then we got to the back and we all had to push, and you know what happens when you do that? It's
wheels. Yeah.
We were like covered in mud. We were exhausted before we even started. So
I would have been over. Did you? Because you can't clean off at that point. Like, you know, this is what I'm going to be in for 10 days. I would have been done.
Yeah. And you know what? You know what the saving grace was? Is that it rained. Oh. And that it actually rained that same day, and it washed all the mud away.
Oh, thank God.
So to answer your question about the motivation, every day was different. And that's how we started our journey. And I would have to say that a lot of the times that there were different obstacles along the way. And one of our limitations that we have as humans is that we have our human body, right? And our blood, it can only carry so much oxygen. And so as we go up the mountain, the air becomes very thin. And even though you're breathing in, you feel like you just can't get enough air. And so you kind of climb up and you hike high during the day and you sleep a little lower at night. But the limitation of really being at the mercy of the mountain and the mercy of the altitude and just having to wait and literally wait and sit for your body to acclimatize so that way it can absorb, your blood can absorb more oxygen. That's a different kind of like challenge because you get frustrated. You're like, can't we just go now? But no, you just have to sit. So, you know, that was kind of part of one of the other parallels that I like to draw with that one is that, you know, in a certain way, we're at the mercy of the virus, right? Because we have to sit, we have to stop, and we have to accept that we're powerless over, we can do certain things to take care of ourselves, of course. You know, we can wear masks, we can distance, we can do all those things. However, you know, the rate at which we're all going to get to travel again, that's beyond our control. So I found a lot of similarities about altitude and acclimatization and acceptance and surrender, kind of the same on the mountain as it is in real life that we're dealing with on a daily basis. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'd like to take that just a little bit further, and this may be a little woo-woo for this podcast, but I know you practice mindfulness, and it's something that I've really practiced in the last year. I sort of set my mind to just being more present and being, and hearing you talk about this, it's kind of like, well, you just have to wait. How did that sort of challenge your own mindfulness practice and your own sort of meditation and patience?
Yeah, it's a great question, Elizabeth. One of the things that they do when you summit Kilimanjaro, at least with the company that I used, you know, it's a, you know, a tour operator, the tribe, which is part of our team, we started our day every morning actually dancing. And it sounds crazy, but we would wake up every morning and there were these Tanzanian chants that they started, and we all got up and we all danced and we all got into this zone. And it sounds really nuts, I know, but you know what? After like 3 or 4 Tanzanian chants in Swahili, let me tell you, you're in a pretty damn good mood. It's better than your coffee in the morning. So,
well, let's not get crazy.
Yeah, that all put us in a great mood. And even though we were sore from the night before because we were sleeping, you know, on the ground and there were rocks and all kinds of stuff like that, it really did help. And so that was the Tanzanian practice of mindfulness on the side of the mountain.
So can you talk a little bit about your tribes? Because that's another one of the bullet points that you gave me. And I think, you know, you had talked about the girls that you grew up with and they were with you, you said?
Yeah. So that's kind of, it's a very interesting twist to the story, and I'll make it super quick, but I was supposed to summit Kilimanjaro 3 years ago. And I was all ready to go. I trained for a year. I was like, literally, I was at the airport in Fort Lauderdale, ready to go, all of my equipment and everything. They were flying from Houston, and I was flying from Fort Lauderdale. So I flew, and don't shoot me, JetBlue, I know, into JFK. That was the connection with Qatar Airways at the time. And it was January, and they had weather. There was weather in JFK. And Qatar Airways only had one flight a day that would go from JFK to Doha and then Doha into Moshi. So my flight into JFK was late because of weather. I missed the connection and I missed my Qatar Airways flight. It was gone. And because they only had one flight a day, the next available flight was 4 days later. So they were halfway up the mountain. And I tried, working with travel leaders, had a great corporate travel department, and they tried every which way to get me there. It just wasn't happening. They tried to route me through Ethiopia. They tried to route me through. So my tribe of girlfriends, the two of them got to summit successfully, but I missed the boat.
Well, the plane.
I missed the plane. Yeah. So I asked my family last year, I asked them a year ago, I said, you know, this is like a vision quest for me. And it's something that I really feel very deeply about. And it's really important. So the beauty was that I was able to have a do-over, and I made it there, and, you know, COVID kind of happened. But the really cool thing was that my climbing team that I was with was, they were absolutely amazing. We had one gentleman who was a lawyer, and he owns the world's largest patent law firm. And this gentleman, Ron, he was living with leukemia, adult leukemia, and he had summited Everest and was also a marathon runner. And he was 65 years old. So he was on my team. And then this other gentleman, Tony, I actually hired his little brother, Bill, at Royal Caribbean like 20 years ago when I was a kid, which was really funny. We worked together. That was like 6 degrees of separation. Yeah. And then his best friend was a part of our team, and he was also an adult leukemia survivor and a pharmaceutical sales rep. And his name is Craig, and Craig reps the drug that keeps him alive every day. So he works for Novartis, and he reps that chemotherapy drug, or that leukemia drug, to oncology wards and hospitals. And also, all these people are marathon runners except for me. So, by the way,
I bet none of them can barefoot ski.
That's
though,
true. So. Yeah. And then my last member of my tribe was this really nice lady, Jen, and she was a marathon runner, had summited several mountains, and she was an HR director at a millennial startup in Silicon Valley. So that was my climbing team, and they were my climbing tribe. And the reality, though, is that our tribe was much bigger than that, because for every one climber that you have to summit Kilimanjaro, it takes 5 Tanzanian support people to get you up the mountain successfully. So our tribe was, you know, 5 of us. Multiply that times 5 more, you know, per person. So we couldn't have done it if it wasn't for our support tribe. And they were absolutely amazing. And there were some times when our guides, as an example, like one of our guides, Wilfred, he fell, like really fell down, you know, while we were climbing. And then Craig went down and helped him up, you know, and carried his pack for him. So the climber was carrying the guide's pack at one point. And then, you know, my poor guide, Mark, you know, he carried my pack a lot because I was exhausted. So we all worked together, and, you know, we woke up together, we danced together, we ate together. And really that was kind of like the formula for success. We realized that a tribe that ate together and danced together and sang together, we stayed together. And we really kind of put that collective, that we put everybody's collective welfare first and helped each other before we thought of ourselves. And that was the really special part about the tribe. And I think the other thing too, in like today's world, I would just say with kind of like all the, like the George Floyd stuff, you know, one thing that we learned, and this just came naturally, it was a part of the organic nature, but, you know, we're human first, you know, we're all human first. And it didn't matter if we were men, women, whatever, you know, whatever ethnicity we were one tribe, we're a member of the human race. And it's amazing how that works, you know. We had a common purpose, the same values, the same, and, you know, and we all had an amazing experience. So that was the power of the tribes. Well,
I would imagine, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine you all had your highs and your lows too. It wasn't all just, yay, we're going up the mountain, singing and dancing, and this was so easy. So I imagine that didn't all happen. You didn't all crash at the same time. You didn't all have elation at the same time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, everybody had their days. Like, for example, Bill, one of my climbing partners, and the gentleman whose brother I hired, Tony, I get them confused because they look alike. So one of my climbing partners, Tony, he suffered from altitude sickness, like really, really bad early on. So poor guy, he could not keep his food down, you know? So we gave him you get a climbing name as you're, you know, climbing the mountain. So we called him Tiny Portion because all he could, he was 6'4", but all he could do is eat these little tiny portions. Otherwise he would lose his lunch, you know? So we had to help Bill out, and Bill you know, there were two groups. There was the marathon runner group, and then there was the slow boat to China group. And I was the slow boat to China group. So Tony hung out with me when he wasn't feeling well, and we helped each other, and we lifted each other's spirits, and we all got there in the end. So yeah, you're absolutely right, Elizabeth. Everybody had their own challenges, and also the guide service as well. I mean, different people had different challenges on different days. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, go ahead. Sorry.
Did your whole group make it up to the top? I mean, does every, you know, once you get there, I think there's this sort of image of sort of a Disney World kind of everybody's happy and gets there.
Yeah. Everyone made it except for there was this one really nice lady who was, she climbed with us, but she was not a part of LLS. Her name is Carol and her son. And Carol had a really bad knee and she was in a brace before she started. I looked at her and I was shocked that she was even there. I mean, I was shocked. She actually made it to summit night and she made a summit attempt and she made it up to, I think, like 16,000 feet. God bless her. But she had to turn back because her knee was like just ripped apart. It was such a mess. So yeah. And I had the privilege of getting up 3.5 hours earlier than the rest of my tribe because I'm slow. So they got me up earlier so I could meet the rest of my tribe at the same time and we could summit at the same time. So it took me about 3.5 hours longer than everybody else to make it.
Wow.
But you did it.
It's sort of a like two-sided. In one way, it's awesome because then you're all together. And at the other way, you're sort of like, oh, I need special help. I'm, you know, not. So how did your mind handle that sort of situation? What did you tell yourself in that moment?
I told myself that I embrace my limitations and it is way okay to be slow. And in Swahili, they have an expression. It's called pole pole and it means slowly, slowly. So my guide, Mark, told me, you don't have to be the hero of the day. He says, all you have to do is put one foot in front of the other. And when you're tired, take a break. So that's what I did. And I just followed his advice. And you know, sometimes I think like that's the one thing that I would say kind of related to mindset. On the summit night, I didn't sleep well the night before and I had some altitude sickness as well. And my mind just started racing, you know, I'm like, and I kept asking Mark, I'm like, Mark, when are we going to get there? And then I was like a kid, are we there yet?
Yeah. Are we there yet?
Yeah. And I asked him a few questions like that and he just turned around and he got very upset with me and he said, do you want to make it to the top of the mountain? And I said, yes. He says, then stop asking those questions. Because if you keep asking those questions, you're not going to make it. He says, you focus on right here, right now, this step, this moment. He says, you follow my feet. He says, and you knock on my backpack when you're tired and we break. But if you let your mind, you know, go, then it's game over. You know, so that was a big learning for me about just really learning to ground myself in the present moment. And you know, it was 9 hours of grounding myself in the present moment.
Wow, that's a lot of present moments.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the one thing I would say about tribes, too, that's very analogous to here and today, especially in our world, is that it's such a gift and it's so important for all of us to make sure that we have that support tribe at home. And, you know, in the travel industry, everyone, we're so lucky to be able to have these awesome tribes of, you know, associations and things like that, that we can, you know, travel agencies, things like that, that we can all come together and support each other. But that's one thing that I found this incredible, I would say, similarity, because my tribe on the mountain, you know, we helped each other get up through the mountains, through the journey and summit. And it's so important for all of us today to have that same support system here at home. And I'm so grateful that I have different support systems in different areas of my life. But I never truly appreciated that until I came back. So,
yeah. I think that's an excellent point.
So you touched on the power of presence, you know, that one foot in front of the other and being in that moment. So what, how has that related since you've been back, you know, pre-COVID or post-COVID, I should say?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've heard a couple of things, and some people might agree with me or not, and that's okay. I've heard that this whole situation that we're living in, that there's really kind of like two camps of people, kind of fall into two camps. One camp, and some people may be in between, but this is just what I heard. Some people are choosing to use the situation to learn, you know, new languages, to get in incredible shape, to really take this gift of pause, because at the end of the day, we've all been paused, whether we want it or not. The universe has pressed the pause button for all of us in so many areas. So there's two camps. There's the camp that said, okay, what do I do with this? And how can I make this work for me? And how can I turn this into a gift of growth and learning? And then there's the other camp who really have had a hard time and it's been tough. And I'm not going to lie, I've had plenty of challenges. Don't get me wrong. Like, some days I wake up and, you know, it's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I do practice. I have like a morning meditation practice, and that helps put me into the right mindset. The only thing that I have to do today, or the only thing I must do today, is just focus on the next 24 hours. And that's, even though I'm focused on the future and I have goals and all of that, what do I want my day to look like today? And what would be like a rock star day today? It's, you know, cooking an awesome dinner for my son. It's being able to enjoy the gift of walking on the beach, because guess what? The beach is open. Like, it was closed for so long, and I never really appreciated that gift of it's a privilege to be able to walk on the beach. You know, those are the kind of things that I just never, you know, of course I always love cooking for my kids, don't get me wrong, but it's like just that ability to have that time to do that in a more conscious way is, to me, so meaningful. And so those are just like a couple of examples of how really this situation has helped ground me in the present moment.
Yeah. Donna, did you want to say something?
I think there's also that camp that like has been going 90 to nothing for years. And we were forced to actually take a break and actually, you know, not do anything.
Yeah.
I could.
In the beginning, it was so isolating, you know, it was really shut down. Now it's a little bit better, but.
And Donna, I couldn't agree with you more, because, you know, I was always that person in my life where it was like, okay, I graduated, you know, like high school, and then I went to college, and then I got the job, and then I got the guy, and then I got the kids, and then I went back to school, and then I never stopped. And this has been the first time in my life that I've been given the gift of pause. And I'm like, I kind of like it.
It's such a good way to look at it too. I think one of the things I found myself doing, and I've kind of shifted this in the last couple weeks, is everything negative that happened, I'm like, oh, 2020 can't get any worse. Now my car's messed up, you know, now I got to take my dog to the vet. But then I think back and I'm like, well, I have car problems, you know, like that happens, you know, you need new tires, that's the thing, you know, or like your dog eats something and then they, you know,
that's, you know, totally, so, a thing. Yep.
Yeah, I know. So I've stopped blaming it all on,
but you're there to take care of it.
Well, I stopped blaming it all on 2020 and realizing that, you know, yeah, some bad things happened this year, but it's not all bad. And for me, you know, being home with my family has not really been bad. You know, my kids are about to leave the nest, and so I'm kind of hoarding them to me.
I can. Enjoying every little drop of affection you can squeeze out of them.
Yeah.
I feel like we had this conversation the other day. I have been go, a trip every month for so many years that I can't even remember the last time. It's been decades since I've been home for this many months. And even with the one little trip I did with my husband a month ago, I still haven't done a, you know, one millionth of travel that I normally do. And we wouldn't be in the position we are right now, getting our house in order. We're this close to having almost everything we own paid off. Like, it's amazing. Hey. 10 personal trips canceled, and now we're refinancing the house. The vehicles are paid off. There's no credit card debt. Like, my husband's going to be like, we need a 2020 every 5 years. So it's how you look at it. Like, you're going to have the struggle either way, and you can, you know, I just read a quote not too long ago, but like, you're going to have that struggle either way, and you can choose whether you're going to look at it and cry the whole time or whether you're going to sing. And if you sing, it's going to be better for you all around.
Yeah. And it's very interesting, you know, because, you know, we always do our best. Like, we think that we know, like, what's going to happen, and then reality happens, and then what we think is going to happen doesn't happen. And
it rarely actually is what we think is going to happen. I mean, it's so rare that it's actually exactly what we think.
Exactly. Yeah. And for me, it's just meant like simplifying my life. And some people might think, oh, you know, well, you know, oh, that's a hardship. And it's like, well, you know, do you really need the fancy car? And I'm like, no, I really don't. And I have this little Toyota Prius, like, it's paid for, to your point, you know. Simpler place to live. You know what? You have a simpler place to live. It doesn't take as long to clean. That's a good thing. So, and you know, my older son was going to go away to a private university, and financially it just wasn't in the cards for us. And we just dropped him up at Gainesville in Florida, and he's going to a state school. And he's going to get an excellent education. It's going to be a different education than he was planning on, but it's still a good education. So, yeah. So
I'm curious, this was not something that we previously discussed, we were going to discuss. So if it's too personal or too difficult to answer, George can just cut it
out. That's okay.
But I am curious, you know, you were at the top of Kilimanjaro without any knowledge that COVID was happening, with thinking that, you know, life at home was exactly as it always had been. What were your thoughts when you made it? Like, whether it was totally selfish, like, yay, or whether it was much grander, like, how wonderful is nature? What were your thoughts?
So the question is, like, how did I feel like when we made it to the summit?
Yes.
So it's really interesting because, you know, in life, we always have these grandiose goals, right? So we think, oh, you know, when we make it to if we make it here, then it's going to be like, oh, and all of that. And it was really an amazing experience to make it to the summit of like the world's largest freestanding volcano. It was very cool. 19,384 feet, really cool. And the reality is that the most amazing part of the whole thing was actually the journey. It wasn't the summit. And the reason why that's the case, at least for all of us, and I'll give you an example. I talked about one of my climbing partners, Tony. He lost his vision on summit night. He couldn't see. And the altitude put pressure on his optic chiasm, and he went blind. So he made it to the summit, to your point, Elizabeth, but he couldn't even see the view because, yeah. And so, and he was literally sitting down, holding his head like this, and he was just waiting to get down. So we were up there for 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, and then we began the journey down. So it was kind of like check the box, and it was beautiful and it was amazing. However, the real gifts and the real awesome, you know, memories were the incredible 8 days of getting there. It wasn't that apex of the, you know, of the actual summit itself, which surprised me, because when I made it to the top and when I was looking out there, I'm like, this is beautiful. This is amazing. Now let's go.
So what were you thinking about on the journey down? Because I just have to know, because as I'm not the runner that Sandy is. I don't even pretend to be. I'm a waddler, but I always this point where I'm like, now I got to go all the way freaking back.
Yeah, you know.
So did you have
Lindsay? That is such a great question. So the transparent, like, bare naked answer to that is that on that day, the summit night day for me began at 10:30 p.m. and it didn't end until about 7 p.m. the next day. So think about that. It's like 10:30 p.m. the night before, and then it ended around 7 p.m. the next day. So not quite 24 hours, but pretty darn close. And to get down from Kilimanjaro, you go down a dry riverbed. And this riverbed is boulders that are bigger than Volkswagens. And so you're climbing through these boulders, and then the river turns, and then you're like, you think like 3 hours later that that's it, and then you look at your guide, and you're like, I know I can't ask that question how much further, but you want to. And it was honestly no picnic. It was no fun. Everybody said they should have included a helicopter in the package or a hang glider or a parachute or something, because it was no picnic. And it, let me tell you, it was just no fun at all. I got to be honest. So
I can't imagine it was.
So knowing what you know now, because you've actually done it, would you do it again?
I would absolutely do it again. Yes. And I love Africa. You know, Africa is just it's just a magical place. In my own experience, I was there the first time I went to Kenya, and when I was in the Maasai Mara, it changed me as a person. And I just realized that I was like a guest on the planet, and that the real owners of the planet are this awesome animal kingdom that I'm like visiting. And it just put everything into perspective for me. It was just really awe-inspiring. And so in terms of climbing Kilimanjaro, I would absolutely do it again. I'd love to bring my sons, and I would love to do it with both of my sons at some point. So I would do it one more time, and I would do it with my two sons.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
I love that book.
Yeah.
All right. Anybody else have any other questions before we wrap up? I'm not sure. All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thanks for hanging out with us. Please like our Facebook page, rate us, and be sure to tell your friends about us. You can find our previous episodes on the podcast page of OutlanderTravel.com, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. We would love to hear from you. Chris, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I love your story.
Thank you. I do too. When you're talking about like the helicopter bag, all I could picture, Sandy, was you like, so is this where the van picks us up? We're in the cave on that stupid little halfway down in the cave, and she's like, is this where the van comes
from? Yeah, or like Disney. It's like, where's the fast pass? Like, where's my fast pass? You know?
Like, we're done, right?
Yeah. No, it was
I'm
so impressed, and I thank you so much for sharing. That's so inspirational.
No, thank you guys. It was a pleasure to be with y'all. And all I would just say is that, you know, it has been one heck of a 2020. You know, we all know that. And things are changing, you know, in a positive way, which is good. And I would just invite everyone who is listening and everyone on our podcast to just focus on the gifts in your day. You know, when we take a step back and we just look at so many of the amazing gifts that we have, and we just focus on the gratitude and for the simple things, like the real simple things. Life is pretty awesome. And I know that for myself, that before all of this, I took a lot for granted. And I know today that I don't take anything for granted, and I'm just very grateful. So that's just my invitation to everyone, is maybe just do a little gratitude list in the morning and just focus on three new things every day, and it'll rock your world, and it'll change your mindset.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, on behalf of Donna, Elizabeth, George, Lindsay, and myself, Sandy, thank you for joining us this week. And thank you, Chris. Gotta fly.